As you may have noticed, we've had a few new folks at our gatherings. One of them asked me a question that reminded me that from time to time, we probably need to revisit things from past messages. In this particular case, I was asked, what exactly is roking? So, I thought it might do us all a little bit of good to be gently reminded about roking in hopes that we all take it on as a challenge for our church and as a way to show the community in which we live that not only do we care about them, but that we take our spirituality very seriously. Now, the first year that I was here at Church of the Covenant, I revealed something that I had kept secret for a pretty long time. You see, every year, about Christmas time, I secretly head downtown with a pocket full of quarters and feed expired parking meters. I know it's a silly thing to do, but those who know me know that I have a propensity for doing sort of silly things. I've also found out since then that it's illegal to do. So I do it in a little more quiet of a situation now. But I still do it. But thinking of the difference it made in the lives of those who thought they might be returning to a parking ticket only to see an extra hour on the meter, how relieved, how hopeful must they have felt? That, of course, isn't the only random act of kindness that I practice, but it is one of my favorites, and it is the only one that I will tell you about. Now, the first time I talked about roking, I asked the question, what if a church, say this church, decided to blanket the town with grace and hope? Surely if a world ever needed hope, ever needed kindness, ever needed grace, it's now. What if we began randomly doing acts of kindness, feeding parking meters, paying for the person behind you at the drive-thru, making dinner for a family in need, stopping to change a flat tire, or even just leave an unexpected gift on the minister's car. Which actually happened with a rote card attached to it not very long ago. Now, while I started my Christian ritual my Christmas ritual more than 15, 20 years ago, I can't take credit for enlarging the idea and spreading hope community-wide through a church. That stroke of brilliance is credited to Rena Garcia, who's the director of ministries at Nashville Evangelical Covenant Church. Now, an article that I read about her says that she led a busy life, but her favorite part of the day is when she goes out to roke her world. That's roke, R-A-O-K, as in performing random acts of kindness. Now, the article goes on to say that Garcia believes that random acts of kindness, doing something nice for people with no expectation for anything in return, is simply living out the compassionate and unselfish attitude that was taught to us by the life of Jesus. She says people were drawn to him not because he stood on a mountain and preached, but because he filled their needs. He fed them. He healed them. He touched their lives. Now, Garcia goes on to say, part of the fun is not sticking around for them to say thank you. For instance, when she pulls into a fast food drive-thru window, she asks how much for the car behind her, and she pays for it as well. And then she asked the clerk to pass along a roke business card to the driver. So the card contains an explanation for Garcia's motivation and an invitation to come to her church. There, however, are no strings attached to the random act of kindness. She says that if someone is having a day in which his life is hanging in the balance, this This could be his opportunity to realize what he's been missing. You never know how it might change a life if you buy someone dinner and they don't know who did it. What if we, Church of the Covenant, began spreading grace and hope throughout this city through random acts of kindness? What if we wrote our world? What if during a time when the world so sorely needs it, we blanketed the surrounding community with random acts of kindness? As you entered worship, hopefully you received a small rote card. If not, they are in the back. I didn't receive one either, and I was the one handing them out, so it's okay if you didn't. But they are near where the bulletins are. I'd like to encourage each of you to, as you leave, to take at least one card with you. I'd like to see you take it with you and then continue to make this an ongoing practice of Covenant Church of the Covenant. So much so, I hope that we do it so much so, that when people mention our names, others will say, oh yeah, that's the church that does the random acts of kindness all the time. What we have here is an opportunity to practice hope and to practice grace. I feel very strongly that if we take this project on as a church, not one of us or two of us, but all of us, I feel very strongly that not only will our church change, but that the world around us will necessarily change as well. I believe that a project like this is a necessity for us at this stage in our church's life. And it's not just us either. Churches across the U.S. need projects like this. Not just because they are good things to do, but because we need to break free of the negative effects of rational functionalism and because of the benefits of guerrilla philanthropy. Now, okay, I'll admit that's some pretty fancy words right there. So, let's look at them a little bit closer. First, let's deal with rational functionalism. I said we need to break free of it. Now, by definition, rational functionalism is the tendency of denominations, their congregations, and their leaders to subscribe to a view of faith and church rooted in a restrictive, logic-bound theology that ignores the possibility of spiritual experiences and miraculous events while overemphasizing a functional practice disconnected from an emphasis on leading people to a transforming spiritual experience. In other words, all head, no heart. All head, no heart. Rational functionalism has turned faith into a purely intellectual pursuit that focuses primarily on functions rather than on relations. Overly rational yet functional, hence rational functionalism. Now, the point here is not, however, to throw scholarship out of the stained glass windows, but rather, the point is to show that when academic inquiry becomes the primary emphasis of your spirituality, the church declines because people are not asked to live out their faith in a way that transforms their lives. The church becomes a little more than a social society with a well-meaning but spiritually lifeless people who have little to no experience, let alone desire, of putting their belief into practice. And that's where guerrilla philanthropy comes in. Years upon years of the church and its members focusing on logical, imperial inquiry into spirituality has sort of turned us into religious geeks. Now, I'm a self-proclaimed geek, so do not take this the wrong way. I think geeks are cool. They just have this problem. Over time, geeks tend to collapse in on themselves. We become so involved in the things that most intrigue us that the world outside of our direct interests effectively ceases to exist for us. Now, that is exactly why you want a computer geek working on your company's main server. That is exactly why you want a neuroscience geek if you need brain surgery. They are self-absorbed in their craft, and the outside world's not going to distract them from doing the very best job possible. And that's all fine. Unless you are a geek of the spiritual persuasion. And those of us who have become victims or even have willingly given into rational functionalism, all head, no heart, are going to have to admit that we have become spiritual or Christian geeks. We know a lot about spirituality. We're great people to talk to when you want to talk about that kind of stuff. But we're going to have to admit that when it comes to putting that stuff into practice with those in need, well, sometimes we talk a good talk, but we stumble when we try to walk the walk. And because of it, we don't like stepping out of our comfort zone all that much. It's been so long since we've made a connection with someone truly in need that, quite honestly, engaging with the world in need in that way makes us all somewhat uncomfortable. We've become Christian introverts, and quite frankly, Christian introvert is about as oxymoronic as jumbo shrimp, pretty ugly, Dodge Ram, or even dry eyes. By definition, being Christian means being in the world and offering hope and offering grace. And that's the beauty of guerrilla philanthropy. Philanthropy, of course, is an activity which places others before yourself with the intention to promote their good or improve the quality of their life over an extended period of time. Now, guerrilla, as I'm using it here, is borrowed from the term guerrilla warfare, in which a smaller group of combatants attempt to use its mobility to defeat a larger and consequently less mobile group. Guerrilla tactics are based on intelligence, the element of surprise. Kind of sounds a little bit exciting. So, given those two things, my definition of guerrilla philanthropy is a small group of a society, say, Church of the Covenant, engaging in an activity of putting others first in an effort to promote the greater good through tactics based on intelligence and the element of surprise. In short, guerrilla philanthropy. It's practicing random acts of kindness. Even shorter, it's roking the world. Put simply, if we roke the world, everything will change. Even ourselves, for the better. Think about it. What if we began doing random acts of kindness? From now on, what if that became the largest piece of our identity as a spiritual community? Feeding parking meters, paying for the person behind you, making dinner for a family in need, giving lunch to people on street corners, or simply stopping to help change a flat tire. Do you think it would make a difference? I do. Do you think it would positively affect our spiritual community? I do. Do you think it would change the world? I do. It's my dream, my hope, that every person in this church decides to take this seriously, decides to practice showing the world hope and grace one small random act at a time. If we do, well, I think we will all be amazed at the difference that it will make. We offer you the opportunity to respond to the message or to share with this spiritual community thoughts
that it kind of helped develop in your head. Are there those who would like to share?
I probably told this a couple of years ago when we were on this subject, but quite a few years ago, Judy and I were on our way up the Boone, and we had a blowout on, I think it was 421 north there, on the other, where you cross the river going up the hill there. And it was, you know, middle of summer, it was hot. We pulled over to the side as quick as we could. And hardly before, you know, we were just thinking about, what are we going to do? I didn't really feel like changing a tire, you know, it was about 90 degrees. And this guy comes along in a pickup truck, and he jumped out, he pulled up behind us, jumped out, ran over, hardly said anything, and asked us if we had a jack, I think. So I said, yeah, and so we get the jack out, he jacks up the car, changes the tires, and before you knew it, he jumped in his car and took off, his truck, and just took off. And I think I offered him a $10 bill or something, and he just waved it off and he just went on. The only thing he didn't do right was he didn't leave one of those cards.
Yeah, but years later, you're still remembering that and that feeling behind it. So that's pretty good.
I recently named my new apartment the House of Grace. Thus, my last name is Grace. And so the synchronicity here is really inspiring. But I remember that it was 10 years ago. I was going through cancer treatment. I was having chemo. And there were a group of women that I didn't know. It wasn't of my church. Had knitted or crocheted or whatever, a beautiful shawl. And so when I think of that time when I was going through the treatment itself fades in the background. And what's here right in front of me is the love of the people, of the women who made this shawl. And I have it, I still have it, and I'm now giving it to my brother who's going through chemo treatment. So the power.
You want a little more piece of synchronicity? That shawl probably came from the last church that I served. We had a shawl group. We met every day, knit the shawl, prayed over them, and sent them to the cancer center.
Wow. So it's the love that we put into whatever it is that we are doing.
Absolutely.
You know, the random acts of kindness.
Absolutely. Are there others? We're gonna make you run. We go from one side to the other to down
That's
front.
That's just fine. Gives people time to think.
So, based upon your statement about what you did at the other church, can we propose another? It's proposed SOAK, systematic acts of kindness.
Those work as well. Absolutely. I like it. Are there others?
Oh, I have a thought, of course.
Go right ahead.
I think the people in this church do things all the time already. This is to inspire us. And I think a lot of things take some thought that we can fall into thinking we know what's best for other people rather than trying to respond to
what
might be
real.
And I think
sort of the beauty of rote is because it's just an act of kindness.
Yeah.
It's not that you think that you know what's better or you're doing some grand gesture. You're doing a tiny, simple piece of kindness that anyone would appreciate. And making just not taking credit for it, giving them that just that little tiny moment in their life that was like, whoa, that was a new
That's
surprise.
Great.
Well, I will turn it back over.
Once again, good morning.